Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Jens Nordvig from Nomura. Jens, good morning.
Well, it's actually good evening because I'm calling in from Tokyo.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, thank you very much.
We like that. When we want to talk about the yen, does on-the-scene research.
Yeah, he does. He is in Japan. Let's get to that in a minute. We see, again, central banks adapting to real economy and to finance as well. When you see Israel give way like that, what are they adapting to?
Well, so we've seen a wave of rate cuts around the world, and I think actually what has happened in terms of Japanese policy has been a part of this global picture where the big liquidity injection has put pressure on a lot of different asset markets, and that's forced a lot of these other central banks to follow through, and I think it fits in that picture. And obviously Australia was another one. It's really a pretty global phenomenon. That's part of the reason why Japan is being discussed at the G7 meeting over the weekend.
Yeah, but it hasn't been that long. I mean, and given the J-curve and other aspects of economics, it can't be hitting these economies that badly yet.
Well, so I think obviously you're right. From a trade perspective, it takes a long time to feed through. What these central banks are reacting to is the capital flow coming in, the pressures on the currencies that are different than they otherwise would have been. So the capital flow effect can work quickly through the system. The trade effect can take potentially more than a year to come through. And I think that's actually a very important aspect in relation to forecasting where the yen is heading. Because right now we're in this environment where capital flows are very, very important. The yen continues to weaken on a daily basis. And it's going to take a long time before this weaker level of the yen is feeding into improved trade performance. So we're sort of in a vacuum where it's capital flows that's really driving the whole show.
We didn't even see, though, until just this last week, the Japanese report that capital flows had reversed and people were sending money out of the country.
Yes, so this has been the key focus area of investors. So we all know what kind of policies they're trying to implement. We know that a big part of the transmission mechanism is that they want to see local investors really undertake an asset allocation shift into foreign assets. That's a part of the whole yen weakening story. So we've been tracking these flows, and it's only really in the last 2 weeks that we've started to see the clear turn in the flow data where there's more money coming out, and we can also see it in our own data. Our retail flow is starting to see a pickup to emerging market currencies, which is consistent with that trend.
You're in Tokyo. What have you learned?
So I think the next big focus for everybody is the structural reform. So we have talked about Abenomics for a couple of months. We've been focusing on the monetary easing that has been extraordinary. We've been focusing on the fiscal easing that's been extraordinary. But the next pillar of that policy is the structural reforms. So the TPP is a part of that. And there's talk about essentially also changing the women's participation labor force. So much more longer-term issues are coming into play now, and that's going to be the next leg of this policy framework.
Does it have legs? I mean, I understand forecasting's a game, and you guys catch up and fall behind. Sometimes you fail, sometimes you succeed. But is the Nordvig world a yen 120 world? I mean, do you frame it out to where they were a decade or two ago?
I think in the short term, I think it's very likely that we test 105. We have momentum to go there pretty soon. In terms of 120, the one thing I'll keep in mind is that if we trade to 120 now, it's not the same as 120 back in 2006 because they've had deflation in the meantime. So in inflation-adjusted terms, if we trade to 120, it really will be a quite extraordinarily weak level. Doesn't mean we can't get there, but it certainly will be out of the range. So we don't have the 120 number in the forecast for that reason.
Who gets hurt, both in the flow sense or in a trade sense? About 30 seconds.
So that's actually very interesting because you can see it in the local newspapers today. There's much more talk about the damage that's being done from a 2-week yen. Energy prices are going up. And essentially all the import companies are getting hurt, and there's much more focus on that at this point than I've seen before.
Jens, there's talk about a commodity super cycle, raging debate about commodities down or commodities level. I don't really hear anybody talking about a big advance. What does the Nomura call on the commodity complex of currencies?
Yeah, I think we probably subscribe to the view that we are peaking out in terms of the bull run. And the way it's certainly feeding into our thinking is when we look at emerging markets, because the previous winners, Brazil, other big commodity exporters, they are seeing damage from a turn in commodity prices, and perhaps they didn't manage the bull market that well either. So I think you really need to pick your emerging market countries in a different fashion now, where we seem to have a very different trend in commodity prices.
Well, what is that? How do you pick them?
Well, so like the basic differentiation you can do is who are the big importers versus who are the big exporters. And if we ignore the yen issue for a little while, you have a lot of Asian economies who are big importers of energy especially, and they actually stand to benefit from what's going on now. And the winner, on the other hand, the losers will be countries like Australia, Brazil, Canada, who are the big commodity exporters.
And is this now not just cyclical, but has this become the long-term outlook for them until we get into another cycle?
Well, so I think obviously there's a big difference between having a different gradual trend downwards compared to a collapse. So I'm not calling for a collapse, but I think the long-term trend where we were just sort of sure that we're going to have an increase, that is potentially over and really matters. And for a country like Brazil, where the non-commodity sector is not particularly competitive, that really constitutes a problem. And that you can see in the performance of the equity market there. The commodity stocks are down, and the other stocks are not really doing too great either.
Before we let you go, the idea of a strong dollar, does that harm us? Have we got weak this, weak that? That implies a strong dollar, right?
So this is the hot topic at the moment, because I think we are potentially in the middle of a multi-year turn for the dollar. And it's driven by stronger U.S. growth relative to other economies in the world. So it's certainly a more healthy form of dollar strength than ones we've seen over the last couple of years, where it was entirely risk aversion driven. So from that perspective, I think the U.S. economy can cope with it.
Jens, thank you so much.
Bloomberg Surveillance, weekday mornings at 7 Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.